Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
Welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today Mr. Malcolm Smith. Good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Rob. Thanks for having me this afternoon.
Great to have you with us, Malcolm. Just for the benefit of people that may not have come across you, would you just give us a bit of a flavour of your background and your areas of expertise?
I was a research chemist originally, then I became technical director for a big packaging company, then I was marketing director in Silicon Chips, then I was MD, divisional MD, CEO. My last job was about 22 years ago, CEO of Dow in Europe. Since then, I still do lots of non-execs as non-exec chairman, non-exec director of 6 or 7 companies at the moment. And I've done training and leadership programs at business schools for companies and shows like this with you, Rob.
Yeah. In terms of professional services and particularly the accounting market that we work in, are they any different to any other sectors you work with, or are they all in the same boat, Malcolm?
I've worked with a lot of accounting firms and I've worked with similar sectors, and the interesting thing about accountancy is it's very commoditized. There's lots of other service industries which tend to commoditize themselves because the general public, the layperson, thinks they can look it up in yellow pages and get the same service from everybody. And the other feature is they tend to charge in hours, which really annoys me.
The joys of the billable hour.
I know. Internally, we might like to do it because we want to know how our professionals and how our partners are getting in business and how the hours are being passed out. I get that. But if you're charging me hours, I think I'm buying hours.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. I'm not buying a brilliant service, tax service, VAT service, payroll service, accountancy service, or whatever I'm buying. I'm buying a service when I want a price for you doing a brilliant job and going the extra mile for me. I don't want to be paying hours.
Yeah.
It's common with lawyers as well. It's very typical, very similar.
Yeah. If we look at the word commoditized, is the world becoming more commoditized, Malcolm, across all industries? As we have automation and technology and it's driving down the price of lots of compliance type stuff.
The world is becoming more commoditized. One of the primary reasons is information travels so much faster. So Everybody becomes an expert, don't they? The whole point about our value add is we have a certain expertise or certain qualifications, which you don't have. So I can help you if you pay me for them. But now, of course, everybody, and even when we go to our doctor, who used to be the expert, you bow down to people in white coats that use it. But now we look it up on Wikipedia, don't we? We go to a GP surgeon, you say, this is what I've got and this is what you need to prescribe.
Yeah.
And they've never heard of it because they did med school 30 years ago. Even the experts have ceased to become experts in a sense.
Yeah, and the balance of power has shifted to the buyer who has all of this knowledge at their fingertips. So that certainly commoditizes things. And particularly so in the accounting profession, I mentioned the word compliance. A lot of what they do now is done in an automated way at the push of a button, even on the legal side of things. So it's affecting them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you have to be very careful in an accountancy practice because it can be all just an algorithm and all just compliance and all just tick boxes.
Yeah.
And I think probably as a layperson, I could probably do that myself with Xero or with another accountancy package. I can just get an accountancy package. I can look it all up. It's all automated. So what are you going to do that's different for me? So you've got to get your mind around that and think, actually, we do all that, and that's a necessary part of the job. We do it right, and we are qualified to do it right. But actually, we add so much more value for you, the client. We really listen. We're really empathetic. We really go the extra mile. We're really trying to get involved in your business or your personal life and really work out the really best ways for you going forward.
And what are the downsides of being in a commodity market, Malcolm?
The downsides are you talk about price very early, and it becomes very much about price. It's price-driven, and suddenly you're in this game where it's the lowest price sort of wins because everything apparently is apples compared with apples compared with apples, and I can get it from anywhere apparently. So that's the issue, is you've got probably you're running a practice with better people than the norm. You're investing in those people, you're developing them, you've got lovely offices, yeah. And suddenly I'm being matched with a person who's working from a garden shed and I can't charge for it. So we have to make our minds up, don't we? Because you can work a commodity. EasyJet is a commodity and it works because you know what you're getting, you pay the price, it's beautifully AI'd. It's a lovely website. It's a lovely app on the phone. It works, but there's no frills. And if you want to be that, that's fine. We have real people doing really intelligent stuff. And therefore, you've got to think about what are the added value things we bring to the party, despite all that commoditized stuff.
Yeah.
Part of the problem, Rob, is we're accountants. We go in every day from 9 till 5, and our work becomes prosaic or mundane. We think it's easy. We think it's easy to do accounting because we're qualified in it. We've done it every day. So it's easy. So in our own heads, we sort to commoditize it. I do public speaking for my career. And people think, well, that's amazing. But to me, it's easy. And I can't lose sight that to you, it looks very, very valuable. But to me, it's just every day I can do it very easily.
And you're talking about proximity bias there. You get so close to the brilliant stuff that you do that you feel it's quite mundane.
And you never celebrate it and you never recognize it. And people stop saying thank you. And we stop having meetings with your sunshine meeting, which celebrate the fact we have value. We stop listening to clients say, great job. Thank you very much. Because it's every day. So you're right. Absolutely.
So here's a paradox that I've got in my head as a result of something you've said. If the power is in the buyer's hands now with all the knowledge that they have, you think they would be able to discern between a good accounting firm and a bad one, or a good one and a better one. But actually, they commoditize them all in that despite their knowledge, they think an accounting firm is an accounting firm is an accounting firm, the same as a bank is a bank is a bank.
Yeah.
And they put them all in one box, and it's difficult for them to discern the difference, isn't it?
It is. It is. In some professions, the buyer doesn't even care whether you're better or worse because he knows you have to be compliant and he knows that he can sue you if you get it wrong. The problem with that commoditized buyer is if it's not a pure commodity like a drawing pin, they're going to miss out on a whole pile of value adds which they could have got had they thought about it and invested, because it's not about price, Rob, is it? It's about added value.
So you've talked about when you are perceived as a commodity, it becomes about price. It also, as a firm, must be hard to attract talent if you look and sound the same as all the other accounting firms. It's hard to attract new clients. It's hard to put out a value proposition. Are they, in summary, the downsides of being in a commodity market?
Yeah, they are. You can successfully run an accounting firm as a commodity as long as you understand what you're doing and don't start to let your margins leak away by over-servicing. People get you fixed on a price and then they ring you on a Saturday morning and say, "Ooh, hi, Rob, could you just do this?" And now they're a client and you're client-centric and you say, "Of course we can." You think, "Hang on a minute, that's not now being paid for."
Yeah. And when you're in that position where you want to create margin, as you talked about, there's very little margin in compliance work. So professional services firms, they talk about advisory now. That's where the added value is.
You've got to start to expand your service range to include advisory, consultative services, and you have to think of all the add-ons you could possibly do, which are not necessarily directly into accountancy, but they're sort of in the same framework. You know, I talk to a lot of recruitment firms now who do psychological profiling as an add-on, because a recruitment firm is a recruitment firm is a recruitment firm. If you get these extra add-ons of we interview twice and we profile people and we look at your value systems and we look at your competency set within your business and we match it to the profile of the candidate, you think, my God, this is so different. It's not just hiring a bum on a seat. And that's what we've got to do in accountancy things. And of course, the law's changing all the time. My accountants, they send me stuff all the time. This is what changed yesterday. This is what you need to do tomorrow. This is what you need to do on furlough tomorrow. This is what you can do now. We've done this. And you think, this is all proactive brilliance. And even if I wanted to go anywhere else, I wouldn't, because they're giving me so much stuff for free now. And for the listeners, what you've got to do is go into your business as a team and start working out, why do people really at the end choose us? And I think it's a question worth asking. I know the best way to find your value add is to ask people why they chose you. So let's say you're down to a shortlist of five and you asked them a month ago, 5 months ago, half a year ago, you had a shortlist of three accounting practices you could have chosen and you eventually chose us, ABC Accounts in Manchester. Why was it? And you'll be amazed about the response. They might say, because that lady on the telephone who we rang, she rang us back every time she said she was going to do. She had the right information to hand every time. You did exactly what you said you were going to do on the tin every single time. And that was just amazing. And you think, well, that's an insight I never thought we had. I thought our reports were presented brilliantly well, but it wasn't. And then if you Pareto that, the reason why people choose us is because we listen, or because we've got this add-on service, or because we're empathetic, or because we're a little bit innovative about what we do. And we don't do it. How many people listening now would say to their clients, why did you choose us a month ago? Because they're in the bag. We don't think to do it.
But what would a professional services firm do with some of those answers? They deal with certainty, they deal with data, but often the answers to why did you choose us come down to intangible things like chemistry, or I just liked you more. How do you deal with that as a value proposition?
But then you can drill down, Rob. You can say, well, why do you like us more? And you can say, well, every time somebody said they would ring us back, they rang us back
all
the time, every time.
Right.
And then when you Pareto that and say, one of the big reasons people deal with us is because we do what we say we're going to do. So we've got to start recruiting to that attribute. If somebody turns up late for an interview, interview, we won't take them on, because that's a massive attribute that our clients are recognizing. So you can start to get real mechanisms to make your business structured to what the client likes and appreciates. If you sound like you listen a lot and are empathetic a lot, you can train that into your workflow. So you can train listening skills, acknowledge, repeat back to make sure you've got it all clear. All those skills can be trained.
But isn't part of the problem, Malcolm, with differentiation that all firms claim the same thing? We're a listening firm. We're client-centric. We're full service. And
they're not. They say it. They might say it. They might have read it somewhere else. But you can still discern between people who say they are and real excellence in that marketplace.
Yeah. So we don't want to be a commodity. We know we need a value-added proposition. How do we then go about pricing that?
So you need some value adds. You can glean what the clients say to you about why they chose you one way. And the other way is to start to try and think internally, what are the value adds we've got which are different? So we need to differentiate between what I call licenses to trade, those things that you have which allow you to run an accountancy practice. And they're the things you have in common with competition. And this is the big thing we don't get discerned in our mind. What do we have that's in common with competition that allows me to do what I do? So we need to think not just what the clients tell us, but what do we think we've got which makes us added value? And then when you get that added value model, there are three so-called value disciplines. One is innovation, one is operational excellence. But the one which we're alluding to now is customer intimacy. So most of our values would be aligned to really listening to customers and giving customers exactly what they want every time. Now, that's expensive. You can't start cutting costs with that because you can't cut to no frills when you're high value add. So if you're investing in really nice offices and really nice client reception areas and really great add-on services, you've got to start charging the right price. And the way to set price is to think to yourselves, well, what's our limit? What's our bottom line for doing that piece of work with that sort of client? What wouldn't we do it for? Now, the big thing here is people start trying to work this number out like it's a minimum margin or a minimum added value or a minimum contribution percentage, but it isn't. It's really just psychological. It's what's the point beneath which we just wouldn't do that work?
Yeah.
Because the biggest cost in an accounting firm is wages and salaries. It's 70, 75%. Mm-hmm. So you've got to think, well, as long as we cover our costs, we could do any work. That's true. But you've got to be comfortable walking away. You've got to be comfortable with the point where you think, we just sit here and do no work rather than do it for that. You've got to pitch that limit at each type of intervention, whether it's SACS, whether it's audit, whether it's accounting. It doesn't matter. You just have to pitch that limit.
Yeah.
Then you take a normal data point. So you take a data point, which is, well, normally for that sort of client with that sort of piece of work, taking that sort of time, we would charge something like £3,500. So maybe your limit's £2,500. You could get £3,500. But that's where poor negotiators sort of stop. They pitch with what the client's expecting to hear. And actually, we're talking about exceptional businesses that we're addressing today, Rob. And therefore, you've got to go one step further and think, well, what's possible? Without profiteering, without being immoral or without being unethical, what did we charge once, which was exceptional for that type of work? Well, maybe that's £4,000.
Yeah.
And only then can you set what your opening position, which is the price. So we should always quote £4,170.
And we're venturing into negotiation now, which is really what I wanted to get you on. We can't avoid the times that we're in, Malcolm. How has the COVID pandemic changed, given that we're now in a virtual world and we're not sitting in a boardroom with someone thrashing out a deal?
Well, of course, it's hard because really negotiations should always be face-to-face. And telephone's really bad. Email's the worst thing because you don't really see what people think, see what people's demeanor is when you've stated something. So it's really hard. Zoom tries to address that because at least you can see real people in a real room, but you still can't really see the whites of their eyes or their pupils dilating. The fact they're crossing their ankles means they're telling lies. So there's lots of things we still don't read by Zoom. And of course, people get fatigued by Zoom. The big issue on Zoom with negotiations from current research and my own personal work is that people try and cut to the chase far too early. On Zoom, the meetings are much more truncated than in a room because you're losing all the emotional right brain, non-verbal communications. You're losing all the rapport building conversations. It's down to the nitty gritty too early. Negotiation terms, that's a big mistake. So since COVID, we've lost a lot of value on negotiations because we're cutting to the chase. And in the end, people buy from people they like. So, you know, this cutting to the chase doesn't really resonate with people so well. And also people renege more often negotiating on a screen because I don't shake hands. Even when I've said yes to you, I think when I leave, I've still got a choice.
That's interesting. That's a sign of the Zoom world, isn't it? That there's a power in a handshake, obviously, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, there is a power in the handshake. If you handshake, that's a deal. Very few British people would renege from that deal. On Zoom, I still think I've got a choice. A big thing with service industries, and the council are no exception to this, is when we come to that aspirational opening position, the highest aspirers get the best deals. So if you start at 4170, you're going to get a better deal than if you start at 3500. But the big mistake we make on setting the price and therefore negotiating is we use very round numbers when we're doing accountancy. We'll quote somebody £5,000 or £4,000 or £20,000. Or I got quoted a piece of work for doing an M&A deal for £60,000 the other day, I thought. And of course, when you think of it now, it's obvious, but it looks fabricated because it obviously is fabricated. No piece of human being work can possibly come to £5,000.
Yeah.
And the other thing about £5,000, it looks like you're going to move in thousands down to four, to three, maybe to two.
Good point.
So you should choose very non-round numbers, 4170, because 4170 looks like it's got some maths behind it. And also, it looks like you might move in 70s or 170s. So the suggestion of the increments is much smaller. So once you've got that original number and you're confident about saying it, the big mistake in negotiation is as soon as people balk against it, they might say, that's too high. They might say, that's expensive. They might say, you've got to quote £3,000, whatever it be. What we do, which is a real no-no for me, is give away a unilateral concession. So then the whole thing becomes disingenuous at best then, doesn't it? Well, what was the 4170? Why have you moved 1,170 in one fell swoop? And now people start to think, well, is it even worth three? Mm. And of course, the trust starts to dissipate. So the big thing on negotiation you've got to do once you quote your original price is you should only move for rational reasons, which are called tradables. You should only move if they give you something of value to you. Like if you say, well, give us a 2-year exclusive contract to do your accountancy work and add in audit, we can take pieces off for each one of those. If you went from 1 year to 2 years, we could take £100 off. If you pay this early, 50% deposit, we could take £70 off. If you extend the contract to 2 years and included audit, we could take another £100 off. So suddenly, I might charge you as an accountant £3,100, but now you're 2 years with me, you're exclusive with me, you're paying me a deposit, doing other services with me. So it works for me.
Yeah.
So we've got to get into our heads that unilateral concessions are a real no-no, but everybody does it because we don't like rejection and we try and sweeten it with, well, we can throw this in. What's that all about? That was the value. That value never changes. So you should always try and trade it away, not give it away.
So these tradables are essentially a value for value exchange, aren't
they? They are. They're cards that exchange across the table. And you can pre-prepare these, Rob, because once you've got them for your own practice, they're there forever, really.
That's very good. And when we talk about objections, there have always been objections in the sales process, but because of the world of uncertainty we're currently in, budgets are always changing, priorities are changing, strategies are changing in a pandemic world. Are buyers bringing up more and more objections to avoid making decisions?
My big contention with objections is they never change. They never really change. The objections that we get in our business are always the same. Your price is too high. I like my present supplier. I don't know why I'm changing, really. They're always the same. But we never seem to sit down in the cold light of the office without the client and think, what's the answer when they say that? We never really think it through. All we do is we go into the next client meeting and get surprised again with exactly the same question. Oh my God, that's going to be too expensive again. So actually, the big advice on objections is collate them. There's only maybe 8 or 10. Collate them, sit in your office and work through, what do we say when they say that, you know, what's the answer? And you can get some really great answers. You know, if they said to you, we're happy with our current accountancy firm, then the answer is, well, we also value loyalty, so that sounds great to us. And most of our clients have been with us for 10 years, 95% of them never left. If you had that in your head as a script, it's very easy to handle objections, and that's what we don't do. During COVID, the big new objection is, we haven't got the cash, you know, we're a bit stymied for cash. And a lot of my clients, we've allowed them a moratorium in payment. We've allowed them to pay the invoices in October rather than last July, for instance.
Yeah.
And I said, that's a real mistake because we're all in the same circumstance. We've all got business going up and down. So we should have traded that away. So the big advice in a crisis such as we're in now is when a buyer rings you and said, we don't really want to pay you to your terms because we're in a bit of crisis, get something in return for that. We're happy to discuss that with you if we can discuss next year's contract with you right now.
Yeah.
So think about what the trades are when they're asking for these slightly extra things, Rob. Don't just give in because they're in a bit of a crisis. We all are, and we're not a bank.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Any tips for accountants on not charging for time?
Lots of practices, not just accountancy firms, lots of service practices, they charge by the hour or a day rate or a half day rate.
Yeah.
When you're thinking about all this added value, of course, it's not about hours. It's doing the right job to the nth degree, which is perfect and excellent, and the client will love. Mm. And actually, what the client also wants is knowing what they're going to pay for doing that great job. So it's much better to quote real money than it is to quote hours. If you start quoting hours, I'll start doing doing things to you, like saying, well, how much are you an hour? And you'll say to me, well, we're £210 an hour for a senior professional. You think, so-and-so down there, they only charge one. And it's suddenly this match of hours. And you think, hang on, it's not about hours. Surely it's not about hours. A lot of firms, correct me, I think, will add up billable hours internally just to make sure the contribution that's coming in from the billings matches the hours we're spending on wages and salaries. Of course, that's true internally. But externally, it's much better just to charge for the job. This piece of work in M&A for you will cost you £29,710 and we'll do whatever it takes. And if it goes out of scope of it, we will have to maybe rediscuss it, but that's going to be the cost.
Yeah.
Well, how many hours are you going to say? We'll do what it takes.
Does charging correctly make invoicing easier then?
Yeah. You'd never invoice the negotiated amount. If I agree to pay you £3,000, the big mistake that I will do then is invoice £3,000, because then I think, ooh, Rob's £3,000. And I go to you next year and say, well, it could be £2,900, couldn't it now, Rob? You think, this is eroding upon erosion upon erosion. I'm not quite sure how we got even to three. And I probably reneged on some of the promises. So the best way to invoice is to invoice me 4170 and show the line items, the discounted line items. Because you've done the two-year contract, it's 70 off. Because you're telling 10 of your friends, it's 100 off. Because you've paid me 50% deposit, it's another 100 off. And that's why you're enjoying a price of 3.8.
Right.
So the document, the invoice, is the negotiation. And if I don't do all those things, as I promised, I owe you all that money. And next year, when I come and recontract with you and I glibly say, ooh, Rob, you're at 3,800, aren't you? You can say, no, we're at 4170. Do you want to rediscuss another two-year contract? Do you want to pay me early again like you did last time, etc.? So I make you recommit to all those things you're meant to be doing. So that's the really clever way to invoice. So the top line on your invoicing should always be the same. And then, of course, it handles the objection when they say, I know somebody who's using you down the road and you're only charging them £2,500. Yeah, because they're doing this and this and this and this. Do you want to discuss those things with me?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. It's not quite, no, it isn't quite the same.
That's very good.
The top line on his invoice is the same as the top line on your invoice.
Yeah.
So it's clever.
Smart. Malcolm, this has been excellent. If people want to find out more about the great stuff that you do, what's a good way for them to reach you?
On the LinkedIn site's probably good. My email address is on there. I think my phone number's on there. If you type in Malcolm Smith Negotiation, you'll see some videos round about and you'll get my contact details.
And negotiation's not the only thing that you do, is it?
You've got
a lot of areas of expertise.
Lots of leadership, lots of delegation work. But negotiation is probably the biggest thing I've done in the last 20 years. It's the big topic that people like a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do lots of other stuff.
Well, would you leave our accounting listeners with one final piece of advice or encouragement in a COVID world to negotiate more confidently, more effectively, get better deals and feel good about it?
Yeah. Get together on a Friday afternoon, discuss what clients have said about you brilliantly over the last 2 weeks, which you never do, in a sunshine meeting. Feel good about yourself. Feel you're worth a new price. Put your pricing up from this afternoon or when you're listening to this and be confident with it. And if you have to come off it slightly, make sure there's a reason. And the best business in the world, their prices are going up.
Yeah.
Never drop your price just because we're in some sort of a crisis, because you'll be price merchants forever.
Yeah. Well, Malcolm Smith, I'm not going to thank you for your time today because that's not the way you've taught me to do it. So thank you so much for your insights and your passion today. That's been excellent.
My pleasure, Rob. Love you to talk to you. Thank you.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.